Welcome to the speaker series of the Center of Competence on Humanitarian Negotiation. My name is Rehan Zahid, Deputy Director at the Center. The speaker series is designed to facilitate the sharing of experience and expertise amongst field practitioners around some of the most challenging and complex dimensions of humanitarian negotiations. The first CCHN speaker series is focusing on negotiating humanitarian pauses and corridors. We had the privilege to have with us Adam Afandi, Head of Supply Chain for the United Nations World Food Programme in Ethiopia, at a recent webinar from which we are presenting an extract today. Adam has over a decade of experience of establishing and managing supply corridors in some of the most difficult places in the world. These corridors have seen thousands of tons of life-saving food and supplies get to those most in need. Adam takes us back to the realities of a field practitioner and shifts the focus of the conversation to the nuts and bolts of managing and sustaining negotiated corridors.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon, colleagues, depending on where you are. I think the stage is really set for me because this is exactly what happens in any conflict setting. While the discussion is ongoing around, shall we call it a humanitarian corridor? We call it access corridor. We call it something else. What is legally possible? What is not possible? What is our intention as humanitarian actors in supply chain who need to deliver assistance from A to B, crossing, whether cross-border operations, crossing various communities? If the assistance need to be delivered to refugees, we need to take care of the host communities or other internally displaced people, and what competitions are internally in play we have to navigate. So, what are we really trying to achieve? And that would be to reach some kind of an agreement. And that's what the way operationally we would see negotiations, because there has to be some kind of an understanding where we are able to agree on what is feasible, what is not feasible in the scheme of that context, and what will be allowed, not allowed, of course, maintaining the humanitarian principles in check for us as we operate in these difficult environments. For instance, if we have been allowed, the actors allow us to convoys should be allowed to move, and convoys would be X number of trucks. But if the authorities, whoever is in control, could be a militia, a non-state actor, could be a government party, but they say, yes, in this territory from A to B, we will have to escort that convoy. What does it mean for us? Do we involve this escort to escort us from A to B, or we need to follow some other platforms in terms of engaging with these different actors who are involved in movement of aid supplies wherever it needs to go? Of course, it brings a lot of questions, because maybe whichever form of military actor that is, maybe is trying to position itself strategically. Maybe they have carried out certain atrocities, which is against the humanitarian principles. And that's where, for people who are on the frontline negotiations, actors who are trying to move assistance, it's very important, paramount, to understand in the context in which we are operating, understand the parties who are involved, identify what influences these actors bring into play while we move from A to B. Of course, there are strategic level discussion, political agreements, which have to happen before any assistance can move between A to B. Then the operationalizing of those political agreements and looking at the tactical implementation. But the way, frankly, we would look at it is how we can segregate politics from operations, and ensuring the operational independence to segregate the two, because one way or the other way, they are quite cross-cutting. But again, it's all about navigating through those difficult waters, I would say. I think when it comes to movement of cargo, I would not refer to the word corridor, because there's been a lot of debate from the beginning in this forum to call it or not to call it corridor. So whichever space we want to move in, and I think it's important to engage with all parties involved. And what does that mean? That means whichever stakeholders are in play, could be higher authorities within the government structures, and then there could be other actors along the chain who may be controlling certain segments of those routes, which will also be required as we move along with them. Traditionally speaking, strategic donors play a very important role because they also have certain influences with various actors where they can play a very vital role behind the scene to help achieve some of the operationalizing some of the ideas which are in play in terms of moving assistance from A to B. I think these are very high level discussions, but again, it can have a lot of impact when we want to operationalize certain movement of assistance from A to B in very difficult conflicts where assistance is not moving as frequently as it should. Challenges and dilemmas in this area, of course, there is a lot of there could be negative image because whenever we are operating in conflict settings, we could be blamed for movement of arms, smuggling, feeding the enemy, reliance on aid, a lot of negative propaganda, which can directly, indirectly put our, I would say, staff and humanitarians in the harm way. And also the safety and security of assets could also be compromised. And frankly, what we have seen recently experienced in last 12, 18 months, the power of Twitter, which professionally I never experienced it before that, is gigantic. One tweet can bring the whole setup and system to its feet. And I think as humanitarians, we still need to learn how to deal with the new context in terms of this environment. How can we leverage using the same mediums more positively than it affecting us negatively? I think this is a separate debate, but can have gigantic impact where within 24 hours, all the convoys in the country can come to a standstill because communities have started throwing stones. They've started blocking aid trucks, which are moving in whichever direction. But when we go towards implementation of movement of convoys, of course, it has to be very cleared from top bottom in terms of clearly identifying which routes we are going to take, where the trucks will overnight if we need to overnight, and in case if something goes wrong, what are the incident protocols in place in terms of notification and also ensuring that we have been able to sensitize those communities while we move along. But small basic things, and at times we forget, when we go from A, B, C, we have to go one by one and we cannot jump from A to D and A to E because that's already asking for trouble. So I think there are some basic practical systems which need to be put in place in terms of serving communities. If we go one step at a time, involve whatever structures are in place, give them the ownership of our planning to work with us, it becomes much more easier in terms of taking the ownership. And I think I had a very positive experience, I would say, I'm quoting South Sudan since I'm not there anymore. And there was two communities where we had significant challenges in terms of moving assistance. And while we were able to obtain agreement, understanding from all the communities where we were supposed to pass, unfortunately, one of our convoy came under an attack. Some cargo was looted. And when we came back to that community structure, both formal, informal, the community took upon itself, the leaders, they said, we will recover. And whatever is not recovered, we will. So there was some goats, cows, etc. sold. They recovered that food. And then they helped us deliver that assistance to the neighboring county where the cargo was to be delivered. So a very bad story, which for many, many years was a bad feud between the two communities, became a very positive story just by having a different kind of interaction with these communities. To achieve that level of trust, it's a process. We have to go through that process step by step. It takes time. It's not automatic. But again, wherever we generally intervene, there are at times certain platforms available. At times we have to create those platforms. It's important to understand local context. That is paramount in terms of understanding the culture, understanding the history, and what has led to where we are and what are the expectations. Now, in terms of, I think, when we talk about skills in terms of negotiation, theater, I think we have to be patient. There are no quick solutions at times, depending on how complex that issue is. When it comes to knowledge, I think technical knowledge is very vital in terms of understanding limitations within which we operate as well, because we can also not jump the gun in terms of how we as individuals feel and believe, but remaining within those humanitarian principles and ensuring we have not compromised for some small gains, we have not lost the ground in a bigger scheme of things. I think my time is kind of over, so I'll get back to you. I mean, I can keep talking about it, but I think it's good to close the discussion here.